buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Rolled out to my Chevrolet. I climbed out up inside. I pulled the choke and I turned the key, but the old girl wouldn't start. She let out a whine so pitiful it nearly broke my heart.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, and I hope you're bright-eyed and bushy-tailed after the holiday season. And I don't know about you, but I'm always kind of glad when it's over with. Nevertheless, I had a good time, and I hope you did too. Lots of family, lots of frivolity, lots of kids, grandkids, lots of presents, lots of, in my world, lots of animals and stuff like that. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Quality Transmission. Bob and Steve over at Quality Transmission in Tempe. They do repairs on anything. And like with the rest of our shops, they'll tell you if they're not the best person. But that doesn't happen very rarely if it's related to a transmission. But what they really do good for our industry is it's very difficult sometimes to determine whether the symptom you have is transmission or engine related. And what they do that I find very admirable is that they'll drive your car with you. And because they're transmission experts, they can put your transmission through a series of tests and say, yes, your transmission is causing this, or no, it's not. And they don't pretend to be, you know, experts in all aspects of the car. So typically on a performance problem or on a chugging problem, they'll send you to a mechanical shop. But nevertheless, Quality Transmission is the guy to go to. He's on McClintock, just north of University in Tempe, and no matter where you live, they're really worth the drive, and you're welcome to say that Mark sent you. Last week we had 16 callers in 2 hours. We're going to go till noon today. You have plenty of time to call in, 602-508-0960, and frankly, now's the time. Real quick, though, I'm going to talk to you, until we get a caller, I'm going to talk to you about E85 and the new ethanol gasoline. There was an article, there was a tape where one of the major news stations says it's going to kill all the cars and they're all going to be in junkyards and the only people that can use this fuel is people with the new flex fuel vehicles and blah, 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 blah. Let me remind you, those of you that are old enough, do you remember when they took lead out of unleaded or our regular gas? They took lead out. Do you remember that all the cars in the world were going to come to a standstill? Do you remember that the valve seats were going to fall out of engines? Maybe hundreds to a thousand a second. And nothing ever happened. Nothing. Do you remember when they came out with just ethanol-based fuel? Oh, it was going to clean up your car and plug your arteries? And cars were going to die by the millions per second. And that didn't happen. So let me pose you a hypothetical situation. You have a car with 80,000 miles on it. The fuel system. It's either, on a scale of 1 to 10, it's either pristine, which is a 1, or 10, which is filthier than you can imagine. Now, ethanol is a cleaner. I won't argue that point. And ethanol will clean up your fuel system. So if you put ethanol in a car that's already pristine, there's no harm, no foul. If you put ethanol in a car that has a fuel system that hasn't been serviced in 100 years, it's going to clean it up. And depending on the mileage and depending on the severity of the dirtiness in the fuel system, the car will either be better at the end of a good flossing and brushing, or it's going to be worse. And frankly, in my opinion, 8 out of 10 are going to be fine and better. And 2 out of 10 are going to exhibit some form of rough idle or something like that as a result of not brushing and flossing on a regular basis. It's true that ethanol is kind of tough on the fuel lines. But when they talk about fuel lines, they often talk about rubber fuel lines. And it is true that if you have a 1955 Chevy that still has the fuel lines on it from 1955, you may not want to run ethanol through that because it's probably going to soften the line and cause a fuel leak. But let me ask you a question. How many of you still have the fuel lines on your 55 Chevys that were put on in 1955? Come on, what's the odds of that? So I get tired of people who spend their 15 minutes of fame standing in front of a camera just telling the world that, and the one I saw, the one that was sent to me by somebody, said that all the major car manufacturers are going to void your warranty. They flat out said that. All the major car manufacturers are going to void your warranty if you use E85 in your car. Now, E85 is 85% ethanol, 15% gasoline. 85% ethanol. Ethanol is made from corn, sugar cane, and the like. So the idea is ethanol is going to void the warranty in your car. I want to tell you that there's probably plenty of lawyers, the eagle and the beaver and the hawk and the lizard and the snake. Those guys would love to have somebody, some major car manufacturer, void your warranty on your alternator or your water pump or your air conditioning system or your transmission or your dashboard because you have E85 in the tank. Can you imagine that? There's no way in God's green earth that they're going to void your warranty because of the fuel. Here's what's going to happen. There may come a time where something occurs in your car. For instance, you may have an injector that's bad. Now, because they don't want to pay for it, sometimes, not all the time, because they don't want to pay for it, they're going to blame it on the kind of fuel you have in your car. Now, no one's going to really know what kind of fuel you have in the car until they do some sophisticated and very costly laboratory tests. So what you tell them is insignificant, and what they think is insignificant as well. So the whole idea is there has to be a tie. There has to be 2 plus 2 equals 4. Okay? You've got ethanol in your car, you admit it. And we have an ethanol problem because this fuel line failed, and this fuel line costs $20 and the labor to install it is $100. And as a result of that, we're not going to change that fuel line because we think it was damaged by ethanol. Well, there has to be specific symptoms. There has to be specific, you know, looking at it and saying, oh yes, this is caused by ethanol, or no, it's caused because you have 150,000 miles on this car and this is just wear and tear. So as our industry continues to try to fool everybody, do you know what the BTU value of gasoline is? BTU is some kind of a measurement on the explosion capability of gasoline, if I can be simple about it. BTU on gasoline is 114,000. E85 is 81,000. There's a little bit of significant difference. There is a significant difference between the BTU value of those. Now, gasoline's 114,000, diesel's 127, and jet fuel's 128. So you can see that as you go different directions with BTU, you get a bigger, brighter, stronger explosion. So E85 is going to cost you less, but it's also going to push you down the road a little less as well. You're not going to have the power and performance. So if you're a heavy footer and you want power and performance out of a dual-fuel car or a flex-fuel car, you're going to have to go deeper into the throttle, which means you're going to get less fuel economy. See, that's the part that bothers me, is if we're going to put these gasolines in your car to lower the emissions, and they certainly do, and to give you better fuel economy, how do we answer that question that this E85 has 81,800 BTUs per gallon. Gasoline has 114. If somebody had a calculator handy, they'd take 81,800 and divide it by 114,000. That would give you the difference in percentage. So off the top of my head, I'm thinking there's 20% difference, 30% difference, easy. 30% difference, easy. I did good in math, but that was the only class in high school I really did well in. So 30% difference, and you can just add that up yourself. 30% difference in flame and an explosion, all that kind of stuff that makes your car run down the road. So ethanol, alcohol, it's really called alcohol. Alcohol is a cleaning agent. Everybody knows that. Everybody knows that when you put it in your car, in the fuel, it starts off with a lot more oxygen than gasoline does. So as a result, it trims the fuel amount coming out of your tailpipe. You pass better emissions and your car pollutes less. That's all there is to it. There was a time during vehicle emissions when they were tailpipe teching everybody that people would put denatured alcohol, you know, a pint of denatured alcohol in their tank, and they would say that they passed emissions. That's possible. That's possible. Because when you add alcohol, you're adding oxygen, and the oxygen helps lower your emissions. So that's how it goes. But for the time being, I think that if we get E85, I would say that your car needs to be in the newer style from like 2005 and north of that. The rest of us, I think we'd be better off to just wait and see, because E85 isn't going to come out of the faucet exactly the same way every single time until they get their you-know-what together. So I'm thinking I'm going to sit on the sidelines for a while to see if I have to eat all the words I've just said or not. 602-508-0960. We got just another minute, and I want to tell you something. Mercedes-Benz is recalling one of its fanciest cars because the air-conditioned refrigerant could explode. The air-conditioning refrigerant, read Freon, could explode under crash conditions. The German luxury automaker says 432 of its 2013 S-Class cars are going to be recalled. The sticker price of these cars starts at about $100,000 and goes up to $150,000. And they're not the only problem. BMW is going to recall 696 M5 and M6 and M6 coupes from the 2013 to replace a faulty oil pump. The oil pump could fail, causing the car to stall and potentially crash. In a larger action, Chrysler is recalling 44,300 2009 and 10 Ram 1500s and Dodge Dakotas because of a rear axle pinion nut that may come loose. If you have a 2009 or 2010 Ram 1500 or Dodge Dakota, that thing comes loose, you'll know there'll be a heck of a clunk in the back end. A clunk when you stop, a clunk when you take off, and you'll know that you got to get it in. So, back to Mercedes, the automaker found that a rupture of a refrigerant line in an accident could result in a gaseous mixture of refrigerant being released into the engine compartment and igniting, causing the vehicle to burn. Mercedes said it will fix the problem by using a different refrigerant and new hose lines. This is another example of almost wives' tales. Yes, it's true that once in a million times a refrigerant with some kind of a gas that's explosive will go off during an accident. But you have better odds of winning the lottery. 602-508-0960. If you have a question, give me a call.
Yeah.
Well, welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem. I'm your host for the next 2 hours until noon. And we're talking about cars, and you're always welcome to join us. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960 is the phone number. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Tom at Action Auto. Action Auto is a full-service shop that's served the Deer Valley area since 1983. They're at I-17 in Deer Valley. He's a family-owned business. Accurate diagnosis, reasonable repairs. That's the commonality here. Accurate diagnosis and reasonable repairs. They use factory-recommended intervals for maintaining services that they use, so they're not going to have their own list of when you should do it that benefits them and not you. They use factory recommended intervals. Their technicians are ASE Master certified, and they get the job done the first time. He's also a TechNet center, and that means they're AAA they're A plus by the Better Business Bureau, and they also have other benefits that are free to their customers. So if you don't have a repair shop, or if you want to measure your own, try Action Auto, located at I-17 in Deer Valley. Robert, you're first. How are you today?
Good morning, there, Mark. How are you doing?
Good.
I have a problem. I have a 2004 Crown Victoria, roughly 60,000 miles, and I live in Arizona here. And lately, being at the morning guard in the high 30s and everything, I get in my car, and it usually takes roughly 3 to 4 cranks for the engine to start. Okay. And once the engine is warm, like as if I go shopping, I turn the engine off, and I come back into the car, then it starts first crank.
Okay.
Any ideas?
Yeah, I do. In a technical sense of the word, you have a extended cold crank.
Correct.
Okay, three words means that tells us what we want to do. Because if you go in and you say, my car doesn't start on a cold morning, the question then is this a battery, a starter problem, or is the engine cranking but not catching? And that's where we get into communication gaps with between our customers and ourselves, because we don't ask enough questions. It's our fault. We're responsible. Here's what I want you to do on your Crown Vic. I want you to turn the key on and count to three, but don't crank it. And then
okay.
Turn it off. Turn the key on. 1, 2, 3. Turn the key off. Do it again. On the fourth time, I want you to go ahead and crank it over and see if it starts. And the reason I want you to do that is I'm wondering if you have low fuel pressure in the cold mornings, and I'm going to prime the fuel system by turning the key on, and I know that the fuel pump, the electric fuel pump, will run for about 3 to 5 seconds.
Okay.
So you're going to use the fuel pump to kind of push fluid up and develop pressure. If you say then at that point, if I do that, starts right up the fourth time, then you have saved yourself at least $100 worth of diagnostic time.
Well, see, I have my own computer.
Okay.
And I plugged it in and everything, and no codes came up.
And see, that's a fallacy, because yours is really not a computer. It's a code reader.
A code reader, correct.
Right. The next step up is a scanner.
Right.
And a scanner's, they started about, I don't know, $15,000, so it's
right,
not like...
Right, they're very expensive, correct.
Yeah. But there's no fuel pressure reading in your car. So there's no way there's going to be a code related
to that.
Yeah, because there's no sensor. Now, in some of the newer model cars, there is, 2012s, 2013s, but it just because it doesn't have a code doesn't mean we can't fix it.
Correct, right.
Yeah, we fixed cars until they came out with codes in 1981. We fixed cars for, 80 years without having a computer tell
computer
us what code
systems,
it is.
Right.
And most of the time, Robert, the computer gives us a direction that isn't even true. Oxygen sensor code you come up with an oxygen sensor code, and after some diagnosis, you figure out that it has a plugged fuel filter.
The fuel filter, not to interrupt you though, Mark, the fuel filter was replaced about roughly 2 years ago.
Yeah, it's not going to be a fuel filter, because here's what a fuel filter costs. Mark, I can go 65, but I can't go 70. And when I go up to 70 miles an hour, there's some severe bucking and surging, and the car just won't go past 70. That's a fuel filter that's plugged up.
Right,
a fuel
okay.
filter can't cause a starting problem, because if it was so plugged up that you couldn't get fuel, the car would never start, and the car wouldn't go down the road at 30 miles an hour.
Right, correct.
So I think you have a fuel pressure or a fuel supply problem cold in the morning. Now, the other thing could be, is it the coolant sensor on your Crown Victoria? I want to tell you, your 04 Crown Victoria is a huge pain in my you-know-what. Okay? There is nothing that is today that survives underneath your hood. There is
nothing. Oh, no, definitely not, no.
So the problem with your Crown Vic is it's a very difficult one. But if you go back to the fundamentals, now something else you can try if you want to try it. In the morning when it's cold, pop the hood real quick, open up the air cleaner assembly, and give about 1,001, 1,002, 1,003, 3 second spray of some carburetor cleaner.
Okay.
Put the lid on it real quick. If you have a remote air filter, then you're going to have to spray it into the tube. Don't spray it on the air filter, spray it in the tube. And if it starts and runs fine, we've answered the question. It's a fuel supply problem.
Right.
But if you crank it and it starts and runs for a second and then dies, we've still answered it, because it's not spark, it's still fuel.
Right.
And that
right.
little squirt you gave it was enough to make it run. That makes sense?
See, because the mass airflow sensor, I took that off and I cleaned that.
Okay. Well, the mass airflow sensor tells the computer how much air is being sucked into the engine, so the computer can look at a chart and match the amount of fuel. Now, if the mass airflow sensor has a jacket on it, so to speak, and it can't read the amount of air coming in, then it says zero, and of course the computer will add no air.
Right.
However,
right.
that will set a code.
Mm-hmm.
So we're still on the right track. If you want to, go buy yourself a fuel pressure gauge, attach it the night before. It'll say 40 when you go to bed, and in the morning if it says 10, then that's your problem. Either
your problem, right?
fuel pressure regulator's bad, or the check valve in your tank is bad, or you got a leak somewhere.
See, the The pump unit in the tank. I replaced that already.
Okay. All right. It doesn't mean that the check valve can't go bad. It can have a little piece of dirt in it or something like
right,
that.
Right, right. So
but you, in order to determine or condemn the fuel pump or the check valve in the fuel pump, you need a fuel pressure gauge.
Exactly correct.
All righty. Right. Good luck to you, Robert. Thank you very much, buddy.
Okay. You have a good day, okay?
Thank you. Thank you. Clyde, you're up next. How are you today?
Good morning.
Good morning.
You were talking about the E85 and people trying to run it in their cars.
Uh-huh.
Those of us who run more or less high-performance cars, there's some of us who have converted to E85, and to make the cars run, it costs around $1,200, assuming you do the work.
Uh-huh.
One of the first things that has to be changed out is the,
tell me where they're at.
I'm drawing a blank. The fuel,
ejectors?
The fuel injector.
Okay.
I run 55-pound injectors in my car. To convert to E85, the first thing I'd have to do is go to somewhere between 100 and 120-pound injector.
Okay.
Because it takes that much more volume. The upside of it is it's a cold running, so the disaster to performance cars is not. The engine runs vastly colder. That's good. There's enough, with the volume, there's enough octane to make it run. But again, the simple idea of just driving into a gas station and start running A85 could be quite dangerous
okay.
to somebody right. trying to accomplish something.
All right, I want you to hang on because I'm 30 seconds from a break, and when we come back, we'll continue this. Because here's where I'm a little concerned. If we've got a nozzle on an injector and we go from 40 to 120 pounds of pressure, we're certainly spraying more fuel in there, but alcohol atomizes much better than gasoline. So why are we using all that pressure when alcohol atomizes easier, quicker, and better than gas? When we come back, we'll finish talking about it. I'm Mark Salem.
Did you know Raintree Auto Repair?
Monster with the polyglass wheels, the end result of the dream of Henry Ford.
Well, welcome back, everybody. If you have a question, a car question, and you want to get in, now's the time, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by my buddy at Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing, Brian and Thelma. What great people run that operation, husband and wife. They're family-owned and have been for a very long time, since 1970. They can handle anything, major, minor, foreign, domestic, gas, diesel. Thompson understands that your vehicle is a major investment, and they're going to care for your vehicle as if it was their own. Go visit Brian and Thelma at Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing on Main Street, just east of Stapley in Mesa. Hey, Clyde, you there?
I am.
Okay. Clyde, are you sure we're talking about E85, which is something that's not available yet, or are you talking about methanol or ethanol?
No, I run injected methanol.
Okay. That's
E85 has become popular with guys who race
okay.
because it's the actual cost of it is a fraction of 110 octane race gas.
Okay.
But to get to that point where they can run it, and you may have already identified, I'm just a driver. I don't engineer them, and I don't build them.
I understand.
But when you talked about the BTUs, it may take that much more volume to create a comparable BTU while keeping the cylinder heads vastly colder.
And you're right, because I'm looking at the chart right now. And in a methanol kind of atmosphere, the BTU is only 56,000. And that's half of gasoline. But then if we look at ethanol fuel, the BTU is 76, which is just less than E85. So I think that's what it is. You're right. You're going to have to boost the pressure when you get those low BTUs because you need a lot of molecules of fuel, but the explosion value is going to be horrendous. So
Right. They do run very well. And they want you spend the $1,200 or so dollars for you to convert it yourself, they do run very well. The problem is don't go too far because there may not be E85 gas where you're going.
Yeah. Now, you say you're a driver?
Yeah.
And so you're in a big truck right now?
No. I'm in a black Buick.
Oh, okay. I thought driver to me meant that, because I get calls from guys that are passing through Phoenix on the freeways truck.
The guy who built my engine builds the fastest engines in the world.
Okay.
He's got a 462 mile an hour Bonneville 347 cubic inch block motor.
Yeah.
He took a CTSV and put it up to 208 miles an hour at Bonneville.
Yep.
And I don't argue. When he tells me to do something, I just do what he tells me.
I'm with you. There are times, that more than people can imagine, where I'm completely outclassed with respect to the subject matter. And it's at that time you and I both know you just put your hat on and smile a lot.
Shut up and listen and pull out the checkbook.
Now,
it does, my injection, I think almost anybody could benefit from alcohol injection. So long as it's a good piece of work, because your cylinder heads just run a whole lot colder.
No, you're right. And that's one of the problems with alcohol is that it does evaporate. Now, liquid under pressure is not supposed to evaporate, but alcohol is I understand, and I've been told, is the exception
to
that. So there's now, let me ask you a question. Shut up and get out the checkbook. Does that work with the wife?
Yeah, it does. Don't be foolish. The world's full of guys who've tried this on their own, and it rarely works out well.
No, I understand your point.
If you find somebody who really does this for a living, and there is a very old saying that I built this 20 years ago, I made 50,000 mistakes before I got it right. You want to try and do it yourself, get ready for the first 49,999 mistakes you're going to make.
No, that's a part of my life every day. Every day that's a part of my life. Every day
Sure. Someone
brings a car in and they've spent $1,100 in guessing. And we had a truck in the other day that had all the oxygen sensors, all the injectors replaced. Now, I'm telling you right now that would have cost that customer well over $1,000. The problem...
Oh, absolutely.
The problem was one short piece of hose 6 inches long that it had rubbed a hole in it. That's it. A 6-inch. So we cut the 6-inch piece of hose out and we fixed it and we handed it to the customer and we said, that little bitty white hose, that little bitty hole in that black hose is your problem, guaranteed. However, it sure runs good with all them new injectors in it. So you're right. That happens. But thank you very much. I appreciate you calling, Clyde. Thank you. 602-508-0960 is the number. If you have a question yourself, you can certainly call us. 602-508-0960. And you know what? There's three answers to your questions. I can help you. This is what I would say if I were you. And I don't know. And it's not too often that I say I don't know, but I'll be honest, there's times I need to say, I don't know. Give me a call.
Intelligent Talk 960, The Patriot.
We are a voice.
All right,
sir,
we just added a ton of calls here.
Okay.
First up is Rich, then Greg, then Eric,
we are intelligent,
and then finally Mike.
We are in-depth analysis.
Okay. We are your election headquarters.
We are about clarity.
But I think it's time
and
we
half of those want to talk about
we still know the freedoms that were intended for us.
Exactly. I think one of the gentlemen has, like, he's thinking about buying a couple cars. He kind of just wants your opinion.
Okay.
Oh, more callers coming in. Hold on.
Hello. I'm Bob Jones, owner of Quality Transmission Service in Tempe. As a kid, I was a Boy Scout, which taught me to live my life by...
Patriot.
Well, to conserve as much time for our bank of callers as possible, I'm going to go straight to the phones. If you want to get in line, the lines are full right now, but we're going to do all five of them this segment. 602. Excuse me, 508-0960. Rich, you're first, buddy. How can I help you?
Hello. I just wanted an opinion. I had sent my wife in to a nationwide auto dealership for an oil change.
Okay.
They had told her, I unfortunately wasn't there, they had told her that she had a antifreeze leak and then proceeded to change out all three radiator hoses to lower one upper. She has a 2004 Nissan Xterra.
Okay.
We had had those changes, those hoses, belts, everything changed less than 2 years previous. We had no evidence of any kind of antifreeze leak, no smell, and no drips on the carport. I figured she was ripped off. I did raise quite an unholy heck about that, and they did credit me everything, but I'm thinking that I won't trust that location again. I do have the hoses back with me. I haven't taken them over to the place that replaced them because they do have a 3-year warranty on them. I just haven't had a chance to get them over there.
Wait a minute. You can't do both. You can't do both.
No, I'm not gonna ask them to replace them. I want them to look at them and tell me, was there a problem?
Okay. All right. Well, the fact of the matter is that you can do that yourself. You may have already shot your gun empty if you raised Holy Hill with them. But let me make some constructive suggestions to you.
Sure.
Go buy a brand new set of hoses from the parts department at Nissan. And and just feel them and squeeze them and touch them because you're as good as anybody else. Are your hoses crunchy? Are your hoses softer than the new ones? Are your hoses swelled up that the new ones aren't? Those are the questions.
Okay.
And if they've already given you your money back and you got the old hoses back, that's enough to scare the bejesus out of most of us shop owners, because if our technicians or our staff ripped you off, the last thing I want in your hands is the old hoses. That's the reason why we and a lot of other shops, not just me, everybody that I know that plays by the rules, gives you back your old parts just for that reason. So if you've already got a credit from them, here's what I would do. I don't know. Let me ask you a question. When they issued you a credit, the guy you were talking, the lady you were talking to, did you like them?
I've dealt with them before. I didn't think that I had an issue with trust. When my wife went in, he was not there. It was one of his associates.
Okay, good. Good. That's what I was looking for. You need to go back to the one that you felt good with. Just refused to deal with anybody else. And tell your wife that anytime that if you go in for an oil change, honey, just get an oil change, and anything else that's needed, have them write it down on the repair order, write down the estimate, and sign their name to it, and then I'll look at it when you get home. That's the fail-safe method. Hey, if I drove in here, I'm going to drive out, and all your points are perfect. If I was faced with what you just said, if a customer came in and said, I had the hoses replaced 2 years ago, your clowns, hopefully they don't call them names, your men changed the hoses. I'm very unhappy, and I haven't had a leak on the driveway, and I park it in the garage, and there's no leak, and my panties are tied up pretty tight. I'd have written you a check too, because you've hit all the points. If there's no leak, how am I going to explain that those 2-year-old hoses? Then I'd go back to the service writer and the technician, and we'd have our own little discussion. So I think right now I'm not going to tell you whether you can trust him or not. I'm only going to tell you how to protect yourself if this happens again, okay?
I appreciate that very much.
All right, Rich, good luck to you. Thank you, buddy. Thank you, Greg. You're up next. Greg, how can I help you today?
Just a quick question. I just need a driver. I have a Grand Am 125,000 on it, and it needs a lot of work, so I decided not to put the money into it. Local Ford dealer here in Peoria, I've been around to the dealers. He called me on a 07 Ford Focus.
Okay.
And I've been online, reading reviews, this and that. But it's like looking at a newborn baby. Some people say it's cute. Some people say it's ugly. But
I like that. I like that.
Yeah. there's some people report transmission problems and alternator problems. And with the tires that they originally put on the 07 Ford Focus, which were Pirellis, what are your thoughts on... it's just a driver, just local around town here.
Okay. If you're happy with the money, you ought to be happy with the car, because first of all, it's an 07, so it's been on the road 5 years. And
I think it's got about 60 on the clock.
Yeah, and that's good, because that's just a little over 10,000 miles a year. Right. I'd ask them how much of the maintenance records they have. Hopefully they have a lot of them.
Correct.
And I wouldn't worry about the transmission, and I wouldn't worry about the alternator.
I didn't mean to interrupt you, but a lot of the blogs that I'm reading said they have problems with the alternator and the transmission. So
I understand that. But the problem is that if you would have turned the question around and said, "Do you know of any particular areas of concern on the Focus?"
Oh, to the dealer.
No, if you said that to me. Any predict, oh, I, and not give me saying. The menu. Yeah. Don't give me the menu of alternator and transmissions. I would have said transmissions, but I would not have said alternators.
Oh, okay.
And I would say to you that the majority of the transmissions have been fixed to the customer satisfaction. Of course, this car is not under warranty. But if you found out that during the warranty period they did replace the transmission and it is an updated unit, then you're really home free. If the money is okay.
Okay, in other words, that's for the service record.
Yeah, yeah. Find out, because they can punch it up by VIN number, and they can tell you from the day that car was born until today, they can give you all the work orders. So just have them do that, and that'll protect you. But you know what? If somebody called me and they said, I want to buy a Ford Focus, I want to drive it around town, and I feel good about the money end of it, I'd say to them, buy it. I'm not anti-Ford, in the least bit, I'm not. But a Focus is a good car. You'll be happy with it. All right, thank you very much.
I appreciate your insightful interaction with the callers. It's great.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. That's very kind of you. You just made my day. All righty, Greg. Let's go to Eric. Eric, you're up next.
Yes, thank you, Mark. My question is the exact opposite of the man with the 2004 Crown Vic.
Okay.
I got a 2002 Buick LeSabre. Mine starts beautifully, instantly cold all the time, and it takes two or three starts when it's warm.
And it's the same kind of thing. You have extended hot crank. You had extended cold crank. And what we're looking at, now I want you to picture this, okay? The backside of the intake valve is where the nozzle for the injector's at, okay? The backside of the intake valve gets a carbon buildup on it, and it acts like a sponge. So when you start the car, when it's warm, especially when it's warm, the injector sprays on the sponge. And if the sponge is on the back side of the intake valve, does any of that fuel get into the cylinders? Because it's on the back side of the valve, so the answer is no. And so you have to saturate the sponge until it starts dripping. That's called intake valve cleaning. You could use some gasoline additives. You could go to Pep Boys and say, tell me about the most popular gasoline additive that you sell, and look to see if it cleans up, help cleans up intake valve deposits. But you could do that yourself. And the question is better or worse? Number two, this is the time of the season that we have lots of these kinds of cold and heart start problems because, again, the computer has to draw a line between summer and winter, and usually that degrees in anywhere between 65 and 70. And, of course, our temperatures are vacillating over the top of 65 to 70. The coolant sensor doesn't know what to do. The computer says, I don't know if this is a cold start or a hot start because it's 68 and the range is 65 to 70 and I don't know what to do, so I'm going to go hot start this time instead of cold start. All this happens at the change of the seasons. But in your particular case, what I would do is I would take it into the shop and I would say to them, I would very much like to bring it in hot. So can we write the work order right now? I'd like to bring it in hot, maybe this afternoon at 2, and then let it sit for 15 minutes, and then you restart it. And hopefully they'll hook a fuel pressure gauge up to it when it gets there, which they don't have to start it or anything. So they'll know what they started with, and if it starts at 40 pounds and it leaks down, then that's your problem. It can be the same repair as the morning cold start. But the real question is if this is fuel, we need to find out if it's fuel or if it's spark. Because if it's fuel, you go down Broadway, and if it's spark, you're going uptown Manhattan Boulevard. It's different. You're going in different directions. Until we know spark or fuel, we're lost, and we're only guessing. So that's what I want you to be careful with, is the guessing part. The guessing part is I think it's a fuel pump and it's about $800 for your LeSabre. And you say, well, is that a guess or a fix? And he says, well, I just really don't know. I say, well, okay, well, if you guess and that doesn't fix it, are you going to pull that fuel pump back out and let's start with a $700 credit?
Gotcha.
Because now he may say to you, it's a guess. And I'll tell you why it's a guess. We found your fuel after 15 minutes at 21 pounds of pressure. It's supposed to fire at 20 and above. But it's still not supposed to be 21, but it's within spec. So now you make the decision, Eric. You make the decision on whether to go. You're 1 pound under spec. So so those are the kinds of hard things that our industry is learning how to do. But thank you for calling.
Thank you very much.
All right, you betcha. Mike, you're up next, buddy. How can I help you? Mike?
Late Hyundai Sonata. I'm getting ready to sell it. It's got about 85,000 miles on it. And so I was kind of checking everything out, and it's got that Shiftronic. I guess that's what they call it, where you can manually shift.
Yes.
And I happen to notice when I tried that, I very seldom ever use it. So last time I used it, probably a few months ago, and it worked fine. But I went to use it, and it's not working.
Okay.
When I try to downshift, if I'm in fourth gear, sometimes it'll downshift to third, but I have to hold on to the gear shift. And when I let go, it goes right back up to fourth. And sometimes it doesn't show any kind of an indication on the dashboard as to what gear it's in when I have it over there.
Okay.
And so I don't have a clue as to what that problem could be. I mean, is that something simple yet?
All right, let me ask you a couple questions. On your Shiftronic, you pull the shifter out of automatic. Is it a console or is it on the column?
It's on the console.
Okay. You pull it out of automatic and you move it over to a manual position. And at the manual position, you have an indenture forward, click, and neutral, and then backwards, click, and neutral. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. There are switches in the console that after 86,000 miles are covered with all the beers that your wife spilled on the console. All the trash, all the crap that's ever been in that console is in those switches. If I were the technician that's working on it, I'd plug in my scanner, and I'd go drive it, and I'd manually put it into that neutral position, then I'd go down, till I'm in first gear. I'd drive it around and make sure it didn't shift out of first, and then when I went forward one click with the shifter, it should go to second. I can see the command in my scanner, but if it doesn't go to second, it's because the command never got there. Now I know I need to go to the transmission. It's not the shifter. That's the diagnostic procedure, and frankly, it's nothing to be afraid of. This is going to be an easy diagnosis. I have no idea what the repair is going to be, but this is going to be an easy diagnosis for a guy with a scanner.
Well, yeah, the thing of it is, like, sometimes it will downshift, sometimes it won't.
Okay.
Like, if I start off in first gear and I have it over in manual, it'll stay in first gear and it won't shift up to second gear. I have to manually, I can't manually shift it up to second gear. I have to actually go back in to where it's on automatic again. And it won't downshift into any gear when I'm driving. Sometimes I'll downshift into third, but it won't go from third to second or second
okay,
to first.
Okay, but none of this makes any difference because
okay.
What's happening, all that you need to say is when I manually shift it, if I'm in first, if I click it forward once, it does not go into second. There are times that the shifter is intermittent. There are times the shifter will not let me go up or down. That's all you got to say.
1 minute.
That's all you got to say. And those switches inside just command a TCU, a transmission control unit, and then the transmission control unit tells the transmission what you're asking for. So that you're going to start with the switches and the shifter and make sure that they're communicating with the transmission control unit first.
All right. Okay.
Thank you very much, Michael. You betcha. And Tom, I can't get to you because I don't have enough time, but I promise you, you're going to be my first caller on the other side of the break. We got another hour, and Tom, you'll be first. But you can come back about 3 minutes after, which is 5 minutes, and that way you can go to the bathroom, say hello to the wife, or get something to drink. Anybody else, we've got lines wide open, 602-508-0960. Tom's first, and everybody else can be second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, eighth, all the stuff. I want to remind you, too, that when you come to car repair, it's just common sense. Just ask the right questions. And the two questions is exactly how much am I going to have to write my check for and fill in those four categories, parts, labor, sales tax, shop supplies, environmental charges. Fill those in. That's important. We'll be back right after this.
Ladies, are any of these
informational purposes only?
Buckle up and settle in for a full hour of automotive mayhem with the real car guy, master technician, Mark Salem, where the only two things we can't fix is a broken heart and the crack of dawn. To talk to Mark, call 602-508-0960. That's 602-508-0960. Now, once again, here's Mark.
Welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, 602-508-0960. For those of you that want to know what phone number to use to give us a call for the next hour, we're going to be talking about your car and your car only. And I'm going to skip the opening and go straight to Tom because he's been waiting a while. Tom, you're up. It's your time.
How you doing, Mark?
Good, good.
Okay. I got an 84 E350 over the clap. Classy motorhome that I've been doing the denatured alcohol for the last 5 years to pass smog.
Okay.
I did it this year I passed everything except the idle.
Okay.
Will I be able to fix it with the denatured alcohol, or do I got to adjust the carb?
Is it a carburetor?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Have you ever seen those two air fuel mixture screws at the front of the carburetor underneath the front end?
Yeah, I know where they are.
Okay. How bad did you fail the idle CO? Idle CO, I'm assuming you failed idle CO.
Correct. I think 4 is the max. I was at 5.
Okay. Those two screws do nothing more than trim the fuel, adjust the fuel more or less at idle only. At idle only.
Correct.
By the way, that 84 E350 is called, do you have disc brakes on the back of that chassis?
I'm not sure.
Okay, I think you do, and that's called the F53 chassis, and that's the best motorhome chassis for the midsize ones ever. So those of you that say, I always hate Ford, that's not true. This is a great chassis. But in your case, what I want you to do is I want you to get in there with a flashlight and a long screwdriver, and I want you to have the car running, okay? And I want you to take one of those two screws, and I want you to slowly close at a half a turn, okay?
Okay.
If nothing happens with the idle, if the idle stays the same, and I want you to do this with your eyes closed, I want your left hand on the engine, I want your right hand on the screwdriver, stick it in this slot, close your eyes, and then just half a turn slowly. And it didn't make any idle change. Then go to the other side and do a half a turn slowly. Didn't make an idle change. I want to continue to do that, left, right, until when you put a half turn on it, it goes...
Okay.
That's called lean drop. We have just shut the fuel off it needs. I do not want you to go... I want you to do it a quarter of time. Forget the half of time. I want you to do it a quarter of time, and I don't want you to go more than 3/4 of a turn on either one of them.
No more than 3/4. Okay.
Just 3/4. 3/4. That's all.
Right. No. Total.
Total. So you're going to go a quarter, then a half, another quarter, and then another quarter. But
correct.
But I'm going to trim the fuel, and all I want to do is get you below that 4 mark. And that it's 4.0, so we call it $4. So if I get you below $4, you'll be fine. And that's how I would do it, except I'd have a tailpipe probe in it, and I would start it at 5, and I'd sit there and watch the tailpipe probe, and I'd listen to the idle. And I'd trim a little left, trim a little right, trim a little left, trim a little right. All of a sudden, I'd see it drop to 3, and then I'd see it drop to 2. And then when I got down to 2, I'd give it another quarter turn each, and all of a sudden, I'd lose 70 RPM, and I'd go, oh, that's too lean. And then I'd back it out a half a turn each side, and I'd say, there you go. So that's what
awesome.
I want you to do.
You're the best, man. Love your show.
Okay.
God bless.
Thank you very much, Tom, and bless you too. Wes, you're up next, buddy. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark. Thank you very much for taking my call.
You bet.
I am one of those drivers.
Oh.
I was scanning through the channels, and I ran across you, and what an awesome program.
Well, thank you.
Cool.
Thank you.
I've got a 96 F-250.
Okay.
Bought it a couple months ago. And you know what it would be like driving down the road with an overloaded vehicle and underinflated tires? It would kind of wash back and forth.
Yes.
That's what this thing did.
Okay.
Took it into the shop, put all new front end parts in it,
okay,
including the steering box.
Okay.
Added a line.
Oh.
And it's still
does. Still doing it.
Making me nuts.
I know.
Because I'm a driver, I don't have time to play with it myself. The rear end's out maybe a quarter of an inch, but other than that, everything's lined up the way it should be.
Okay. Okay, the first thing I want you to do is do you have a wife or a son?
Yeah, I got both.
Both. Okay, so you're going to get in the truck, and you're going to have one of them stand. I mean, if you just get one of them, fine. Hey, honey, stand over here to the left side tire.
Okay.
And I'm going to put it in drive, and I'm going to let go of the brake, and then I'm going to hit it hard. I'm going to roll forward not even a half a turn of the tire, honey. I just want you to watch the tire and see how it's centered in the wheel well. If it goes forward and then backward when I stop and let go, I want to know. I want that tire to remain exactly in the center of the wheel well. So as I show you, honey, now watch. I got my foot on my brake, and then I'm going to let go, half a turn forward, hit it hard, stop it real quick. Honey, did you see it move? And she's going to say, I can't tell. And you say, okay, well, you know how to do it inside here, so you get in here and do it, and I'll get outside. And so you teach them to do that.
I know where you're going.
Okay. So, well, they know, you know, if at my house, if we had to depend on my cooking, we'd all die because I can barely boil a hot dog. And I don't even know how long to boil a hot dog. But anyway, what you were looking for is we're looking for those two front tires to have loose bushings that are going forward and backwards. Now, I don't know if your F-250 has a track bar, but there's a bar that... Okay. The track bar can cause what that's called the death wobble. The track bar can cause that. Did you, anybody replace that or put bushings in it?
No.
Okay, here's how you check the cat track bar. You're underneath the front. Make sure she still loves you because this is the opportunity to run over your butt. You're underneath the front, and I want you to look at both ends of the track bar. One end hooks to the frame, and one end hooks to the top of the differential. You have a four-wheel drive, right?
No, it's two-wheel.
Two, okay. That throws a mix into it. Okay, I don't think you have a track bar. Yeah, I don't think it has a track bar.
I thought you were talking about the front end, Mark.
Yeah.
Sway bar.
Yeah. We're looking for movement. We're looking for those tires to be moving forward and backward. Now, the rear end doesn't bother me that it's a quarter left or it's a quarter right. That doesn't bother me. Now, another thing is when they aligned it, I would have wanted them front tires to be poked in just a smidge. I want them to be a little bit pigeon-toed, because if they're not and they're duck-walked, then it's going to wander on you.
The guy spent a day with it, playing with it, driving it, and it was a pretty reputable shop, and I know that we talked about it being towed in just a hair.
Yeah.
To keep it from drifting on us and to keep it going down the road straight. But I had a guy follow me in a tow truck.
That's what I was going to say next.
And he said it looked like it was dog-legging just a little bit to the right.
Okay. Now, if that's the case, we have to slot that rear end. So the leaf springs sit on a pad on the differential, and there's a pin at the bottom.
Yep.
We're going to lift that up. We're going to get a little grinding wheel. We're going to hog that hole out just a little bit.
Okay.
And then we're going to set the differential. Now, obviously, if it's dog-legging to one side, you have to figure out whether the hole needs to move forward or backwards. And we're just going to straighten that rear end up. We're going to get it to where it follows. Now, you know, you can go to a car wash and wet the pavement down and drive in and out straight, and you'll be able to see if you're tracking right. But it's easier to have the wife drive the car down the freeway on Sunday morning and you just follow it.
Yeah.
But we need to have that rear end following the front. That's called center. It's centering the car so the arrow from the very back of the differential goes forward. It doesn't go a little bit to the right or a little bit to the left.
Correct.
So we're going to straighten up the center line. That's what it's called, the center line.
Understand.
All righty?
Okay, Mark. All right. Thank you, sir. I really appreciate it.
You're welcome. Great Good luck to you. Thank you. All right, this portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Quality Transmission. I tell you what, I've got the best group of transmission shops in the whole world, but Quality stands out just because he's been around for so doggone long. Bob and Steve, they've been around transmissions. They know transmissions. They're talk to transmissions. They can hear transmissions talk to them. They're knowledgeable. They're courteous. They're kind. They're obedient. He's a Boy Scout. I'm really happy and honored to recommend Quality Transmission to you. They do clutch repairs, drive shafts, drive axles, CV boot replacements, anything to do with the transmission and anything that touches the transmission, they're really good at. They're at McClintock North University in Tempe. You can't go wrong with Quality Transmission in Tempe. I want to say something else here real quick. We were talking about the refrigerant that was being recalled in Mercedes-Benz. Let me explain to you what's going on. Freon has historically not been flammable, but through the efforts of some cowboys and guys who don't believe in the rules, they figured out that you could use propane in your air conditioning system and it would work pretty good, and it was a lot cheaper than Freon. But nobody really,
Steve and Dave,
nobody really liked the idea of that, and so we really don't want a refrigerant that's flammable in your car. That's the reason why in the last 10 years there's been hundreds of refrigerants that come out. And some of them are a third of flammable, and some of them are 1/100% flammable. I'm staying away from the flammable ones altogether, but I think in the future I won't be able to do that. I don't know, but right now I'm staying away from anything that's flammable. But let me also throw something else at you. take a little jar of antifreeze, set it on your workbench, take your blowtorch, your soldering torch, and just wave it across that antifreeze. You won't believe this, folks, but antifreeze burns. It's really amazing to see a liquid burn. It's obviously because of the alcohol inside of it or whatever. The idea is that your car's full of flammable materials, but let's not compromise the matter. All righty, 602-508-0960. Steve, you're up first, buddy. What can I do for you?
Well, I have a 97 Ford F-250 7.3 power stroke, and my fleet guy likes to use a lot of aviation terms.
Okay.
Some of them I understand, some of them I don't, but he compares my power stroke. He says, it's like an old Learjet. It takes a lot of fuel to keep the fire lit. So I take that as there's some advantages that I could possibly do, and one of them that he suggested to me is get rid of the air intake that I happen to have on that particular truck. But looking at a new cold air intake, and looking at the stock one, you know, I'm not a rocket scientist, but it doesn't look like there's a whole lot more air volume to a new cold air intake versus what Henry Ford designed on that 97.
Okay.
F-250.
All right. And I'm going to take you after. I got a break coming up and staring me in the face, but you're exactly right. Common sense is going to overrule what sounds like a good idea. But I'm going to give you both sides of the issue when we come back, and I'm going to bail out of here in 20 seconds. But I'm going to give you both sides because my son, who runs a performance division, who installs those like there's no tomorrow, and his dad, we have different opinions on whether there's value to those. So I'm going to give you both sides, and you can decide for what you want to do. 602-508-0960. Steve and Dave, stay right there. I'll be right back.
Congress.
Well, welcome back, everybody. My name's Mark Salem. Every Saturday from 10 to noon, we're here talking about your car and your car questions. This portion of Under the Hood is brought to you by Larry Harker's Auto. Larry Harker's has been in the Valley since 1967. The current owners, Bob and Ellen, have owned and operated Larry Harker's since 1989, and their technicians have been with them for years and years and years. They are a trusted source for quality repairs, affordable prices in the Phoenix area. 38th Avenue and Indian School. Think of that. South all the way to the I-10, and in between the West 101 and the I-17, there's a big square area there that Larry Harker's actually caters to. If you're in that area or even outside that area and you're looking for a good garage, Larry Harker's. Steve, hang on just a second. I want to say something to Wes. Wes, on your 96 Ford F-250, I'm thinking to myself, it's wandering. I want you to also take it back to the shop and have them take one half a turn off of the adjustment of your steering box, and you drive it, and then have them go a half back to where they were, and then a half more, and then you drive it. We're going to go from where it's at, a half a turn loose and a half a turn tight, and let them know if that makes a difference for the better. Because a lot of Fords, the steering boxes are too tight, which causes you constantly to control the steering wheel, and the nose of the truck is going left and right, you know, real ratcheting fast. Steve, On your miles per gallon. You ready?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Cold air carries more fuel to a gasoline engine. So if the air is cold, then it carries more fuel molecules. And we don't want liquid fuel in a gasoline motor, and we really don't want liquid fuel in a diesel motor. We want the fuel to be sprayed like a mist, and it's called atomization. So on a gasoline motor, if we can get the cold air to come through the engine and gather up those fuel economies, the cold air bus just carries more people to the explosion zone. Here's my question to my son. Diesel engines are 20-to-1 compression. There's no spark plug, and we're going to take this area inside the diesel engine, and we're going to compress it 20-to-1. That's going to create tremendous heat, which the heat itself causes the diesel fuel to ignite. So tell me how this cold air kit's going to work on a diesel when we're going to inject cold air into the intake, and it's going to go into the cylinder, and then it's going to immediately be superheated by the compression ratio of 20-to-1. How does that work, son? He'll say, Dad, I don't care what you say. I've got customers that love them. I've got customers that brag about you know, either small or significant fuel economy, virtually all of them say that they feel more power. He says, I don't care what you say with respect to how it's supposed to work or doesn't work. The proof of the pudding is I install lots of cold air kits, and Dad, I you know, just like you tell me, Dad, I give them, you know, if you don't like it, bring it back. You know, I'm not going to do that with an engine, but of course a cold air kit, yeah. And he says, and nobody's ever taken me up on it. So you have both sides of the issue. And I want to tell you that when they put a cold air kit on my diesel, it didn't make a doggone bit of difference. And the cold air kit, if you get one of those oil type air filters, chances are you're going to have problems because you're going to over oil them. And that's going to create a whole set of problems all of its own. So it's not just like plug and play. It's really more maintenance. It's really going to cost you anywhere from $85 to $200, depending on which kit you got. But you are 100% right. If that air box that comes from Ford pulls the air out of the fender and not the engine compartment, which is already pretty cool anyway. So you hit the nail on the head. What you have right there is a cold air kit in the terms of a cold air kit. Does that make sense?
That makes a lot of sense, and I'm thinking maybe just go to maybe a non-oil type performance air cleaner. Maybe?
Sure. That would be a lot
air
better.
Air filter, I meant.
Yeah,
I meant air filter is what I meant. Okay.
Yeah, because that eliminates all the oil and stuff that's going to contaminate your mass airflow sensor and all that jazz. So a dry performance cold air kit. If you're going to do it, do that one. And besides that, I want to tell you something. I don't know what he's comparing that to, but that 7.3 is a monster motor. Ford hasn't made a good motor since the 7.3. The new 6.6 or whatever the heck it's called, time is out on it. But that 6-liter, that was a boat anchor from the very beginning and continues to be.
Well, and like my old, dear old deceased grandpa said, and this may make sense to you, there's no substitute for cubic inches.
You're right. I don't care about them little Hondas that's got the 1.2 liter motors in them. There is no substitution for cubic inches. And when my wife pulls up next to you at the traffic light with her 6.2 liter V8 high performance Tahoe, that little car is only going to see her tailpipe. So there's no substitution for cubic inches. Your grandfather and I are joined at the grease line.
Yep.
All righty, buddy.
All right, well, thank you.
Thank you very much, Steve. Thank you for holding. Dave, you're up next. Dave, how can I help you?
Hi, Mark. How are you doing?
Good.
Yes. We just bought a 2012 Camaro last year, and my 14-year-old son was with me, and we got home and got out of the car and he noticed like a popping noise, like popcorn, and it seems like it comes out of the exhaust or around the catalytic.
Uh-huh.
Is that normal or is that just kind of something that's new when it wears off? I didn't have an answer for him of what that was. I just assumed that it was something with the catalytic converter since it was a new car.
No, it is. You're exactly right. That's the exhaust. Now, let me ask you on this 2012 Camaro, did you get that super hot one with the blower on it? Did you get the really hot rod Camaro? Okay, I lost you.
I think
you.
We must have lost him.
All righty. Yes, you're exactly right. The popcorn sound on a new car is just the exhaust cooling off and stretching out, and then when it gets hot, it stretches out, and then when it contracts when you shut the engine off. It's nothing to worry about. It's absolutely very normal. And in time, one of two things will happen. In time, you'll get used to it, or it'll quit, or something in between. But it's not anything to worry about. And the reason I ask you is because that new Hot Rod Camaro had a blower on it, and they're running 600 horsepower on it. And I haven't talked to anybody who owns one yet, but I'd be interested in knowing what their feelings are. Let's go on to Tim. Tim, or is it Jim?
It's
morning.
Tim,
good morning to you, buddy.
Hey, I got a question for you. I got a quote I want to do a sanity check on.
Okay.
I got in Silverado 04, 4x4, 5.3 liter V8, and I need the water pump replaced. It's leaking at the bottom of the orifice.
Okay, don't tell me numbers. Don't tell me numbers. Go ahead.
Okay, and the master switch for the electric windows needs to be replaced also.
Okay. So, do you have an estimate in front of you that includes the water pump two clamps, gallon and a half of coolant, labor, shop supplies, and environmental charges and sales tax?
Yep.
Okay. Do you also have the same estimate for the door switch and the labor to diagnose it and the labor to replace it plus all those other things?
Well, it's one estimate for both.
Okay. But. Okay. Good, 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 good. Oh, boy. You're going to really tax me here. I'm just going to shoot from the hip. You're probably between $150 and $200 for the water pump, the coolant, the labor. I don't know if they're going to flush or not. That'd add about $30 to it. And as far as the master switch on the door, I think you're going to be in another $200 range. So I'm thinking you're going to be in the vicinity of $500 to $600. How did I do?
You're about $300 low.
Okay. So you have a $900 bill for that?
Yep.
Okay. Here's what you do. Here's what I would do. First of all, if you save yourself $200 after spending 20 minutes on the phone, you can take $200 divided by 20 minutes, and I don't think you've made that kind of money in your whole life, because I know I haven't. So all I want you to do is ask them to be specific. Fill in the blanks. What does the pump cost? What does the switch cost? What does the labor on the pump cost? And what's the labor on the switch cost? Those are the big ones. Then from there, you can either go online or you can call a couple auto parts store. But most of us don't deal with the auto parts stores that are more retail. We're buying from warehouses. But the idea is that those are the four big variables. I'm impressed for one thing that you have all of the numbers on one estimate. Rarely do I see that. So that gives, I'm going to give them a attaboy point for that. I'm also going to tell you that I'm shooting from the hip and I could be so wrong on my $500 to $600 estimate, it's not even funny. But if you shop that just a little bit and you call, and here's how to do it. On Monday mornings, you can't call somebody and ask them to drop what they're doing because they're busy because they got a line of traffic outside. Wait till Monday afternoon or Tuesday early morning, or late morning, I should say, and you just call up and you say, here's
Mark,
my name and my
break.
Phone number. We're going to take a break. When we come back, I'm going to finish my thoughts. Well, welcome back, everybody. I sure blew right through that break, and I'm sorry. But, Tim, I'm going to finish up real quick. I don't know who's right or who's wrong, but I suspect it's me. Even if I added $100 to the numbers that were going through my mind, to the parts and to the labor, I'd still only be at $700. The variation between shops in town here, I have seen, is between 25 and zero. There's a real, there's a lot of shops that are going to be 10% apart. We're going to see a little bigger division between perhaps the dealers and some of the independents, and then we're going to see a really big division between the dealers and a chain. So there's going to be that. But I'll tell you what I will do for you. I'll look it up for you myself, but I need you to give me a specific description of your truck. So I need more in your case other than an 04 Sierra 4x4 5.3. I need to know if it's a half ton, four-wheel, I know it's a four-wheel drive. Give me the information and water pump and master switch, it'll be the two I'll get. And then their diagnostic fees are going to be whatever their diagnostic fees. And then that'll give you a head start. And I'm gonna have my staff bid it with them not knowing how or why they're bidding it. And then that way we'll get good, clean numbers. So you're just going to email me at mark@marksalem.com, and I'll do that on Monday for you. mark@marksalem.com, and I'll look that up Monday for you. All righty, let's go to Jim. We have a Jim now. Jim, how are you today? What can I do for you?
Good. How you doing, Mark?
Good.
I have a question on my 2011 Ford F-150. The problem is in the tow haul mode.
Yeah.
In the transmission, is that when I pull my travel trailer, like when I'm coming up to a stop, I think the transmission, they have it going into like, so it goes into a manual mode, where it would normally shift it down, so I don't have to put my foot on the brake much. And then, but I think it takes it from third to second way too soon.
Okay.
And it really slams into second gear and really jerks us. And also the other problem is, like, when you're going down a steep hill, if I put my foot on the brake, just tapping it, it'll put that transmission into the second gear when I'm going about 40, 45 okay. miles an hour.
What you're describing is the way it's supposed to be. Let me make a suggestion to you. On flat ground, here's when I want you to go to tow haul. I don't want you to go to tow haul every time you're towing or in every place you're towing. I don't want you. I don't want you to stay in regular transmission until you need tow haul. But tow haul raises the pressure in the transmission, and it also has a completely different shift pattern. And the shift, the problems you're describing as problems are not that, they're not problems. When you come off of Payson and you're hauling your trailer and you're going to go down that hill, you should be in tow haul. And the first time you tap your brakes, every single vehicle, including all the GMCs I own, will downshift. Because that's okay. How it's programmed. And so it's going to hold out shifts longer. Here's what you don't want to do. This is why we even got tow haul. You're driving down a flat road, and the transmission's going, it's hunting. It's hunting for a gear it likes. And so if you barely touch the throttle, it'll downshift, and if you let go, it'll upshift. And so your transmission is constantly hunting and overheating. So when it's hunting and overheating, push the tow haul. Other than that, going up a hill, you ought to be in tow haul. Going down a hill, you ought to be in tow haul. Flat ground, kick it off. But okay. What you're describing is completely normal, okay?
All right, thank you for your help.
You betcha. Thank you very much. When we come back, we're going to get, we have another Jim and Ted. We're going to get both of them. And let me give you my email address one more time, because I'm always happy to help you in an email environment. Mark with a K. Mark at Mark Salem. Salem like the cigarette, SALEM.com. Mark at MarkSalem.com. Don't be shy. There's no question you can ask me. I haven't been asked before, and I'll give you the best information I can. So, Mark at MarkSalem.com, and obviously our website is MarkSalem.com, where you can find the list of the best repair shops in town. The best repair shops in town, and in a minute, I'll tell you why I say that.
Intelligent.
Well, welcome back, everybody. My name is Mark Salem, and we're here just wrapping up the show. We've got one caller, but I just want to go back to doggone it, Tim and his water pump and master switch. My staff is texting me, and this is the gist of what they say to me: "You really blew that estimate." Tim, when you send me that information, I need to know, and one of them brings up a good point, is it a crew cab, a club cab, a conventional cab, extended cab? Tell us what kind of cab it is. Tells us how many switches, how many windows you're going to have to control from the switch up front. It could be a two window. It could be an extended cab without electric rears, or it could be a crew cab that has four windows. So that's important for you to send that through, and they promised me they'll do a better job than I did. Okay, we're going to go to Jim. Jim, you're number two. Jim, how can we help you today?
Good morning, Mark. Got nothing for you to help me on, but a little earlier you were talking with the gentleman that had the Camaro, and I know he got disconnected or dropped off, and you had commented about whether it was the supercharged one. I'm assuming you're talking about the ZL one.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't own one, but my friend does, and I've had the pleasure of taking it out. And what's more, the horsepower is definitely impressive. The acceleration factor is fantastic. But what's more impressive with the ZL1s is the performance or the handling that they do. When you can do a cloverleaf entrance onto the highway at 85 and not miss a beat, it's quite an impressive handling machine. So yeah. I just wanted to let you know, they are fantastic.
Thank you. I haven't talked to anybody who's bought one. They have, it's the new styles, it's the newest of the ground work, the suspension, yeah. The steering. But it basically has a blown 454 in it.
It does. And I got to tell you, this model that I've driven and is my friend's car is the 6-speed model. And the acceleration factor is unbelievable. And I've been around hot rods my whole life. And so very impressed with what the car builders are doing now. Overall, it's a fantastic car.
Okay. Well, and another thing, too, is I have a 2010 that we put a blower on. They didn't come out with blowers back then, so I don't have the ZL1 package. But I can get 22 miles a gallon on the highway by using cruise control, and I can be doing 70, 75 as long as I can keep that tack at 2,000 or less.
And so, that's funny, because my friend has a big Chevy truck and also an old 70 Chevelle that's a street rod, and his comment was his Camaro is the best gas mileage car in his garage.
Exactly. Exactly. That's exactly what I've been hearing with respect to the supercharged cars, is that you get everything, because I've always said you cannot have fuel economy and power and performance together, but that new Camaro evidently says different. So thank you very much.
I think Chevy did get it right.
Yep. Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Mark.
You bet. The reason why my list of best car repair shops is better than anybody else is this reason. Because I put my money where my mouth is. You see, it only 1 out of 100 people that apply get on our list. And I look them in the eye and I meet them in their office and I shake their hand and I say, don't throw me under the bus. Because I'm putting $5,000 of my money, not your money, Mr. Garage Owner, but my money, that says that you're always going to be treated fairly and we're going to use the Better Business Bureau to affect that. So I want you to deal with customer complaints and stuff at 51%, 55%. I want you to give the tie to the customer. I don't want you to throw me under the bus, because here's the bad news. If I toss you off the list, I'm not shy about posting that on the internet. If you want to go look at some of the shops I've tossed, go take a look. Because they don't play by the rules. And so I'll pay the $5,000 to fix that customer's car or to rebate money that you charged them that didn't, but I'm kicking your tail end off my list, and I'm not... You know, there's no defense necessary for the truth. So that's why it's important. It's important that I have my money where my mouth is. I promise you, if you have a dispute, it'll go through Better Business Bureau and it'll go through arbitration. And there'll be a panel of judges that sit as judges on this dispute. And whatever they say goes. So if they tell the shop to fork up a refund, or if they tell the shop to redo some work, he'll do that. Here's the good news. Since 1988, we've never been to arbitration. Never. They settle them before they get there. That's what's important. Another good shop that you just can't go wrong with is Phoenix Body Works. He was voted one of the best body shops in Phoenix, and they've been on my best car repair shop for years and years and years. Greg May, the owner, and his staff has been servicing Phoenix area since 1982. They have free computerized estimates, a written lifetime warranty, and as your, quote, insurance claim professionals, Phoenix Body Works takes the hassle out of dealing with your insurance company. Their employees are ASE certified, that's the mechanical side, ICAR certified, which is the paint and body side, and he is also a member of the Better Business Bureau, and so you just can't get better than that. Arizona law says it's your vehicle and you choose which body shop you want. You choose which body shop you want. Phoenix Body Works serves North Phoenix, Anthem, New River, and they're located at 19th Avenue, half block north of Deer Valley Road. So when your car is wrecked, you have the choice. And if you call me and ask me personally and you live in that area, that's going to be the choice, Phoenix Body Works. One of the things that the responsibility I've had, and I've been on the radio in the Valley area since 1988, as a matter of fact, I got the job right after Evan Meekum was impeached, because everybody had let go of their Saturday crews because it was all tied up with the Evan Meekum impeachment trial. And so they called me and they said, you had done a couple of guest spots on our show, so would you like to be a permanent guest on a show? And some of the people I worked with originally were Michael Dixon and Lisa Millay and Jack Blair, Preston Westmoreland. Those guys hosted the show. And then after a while, they said, hey, I think you can do it by yourself. And they gave me that responsibility, which I think I've been called in a couple of times, folks. I have my own chair in the general manager's office, and the conversation always starts out like this. Did you really say? And I say, yes, I did. And they said, could we not do that again? And I say, yes, I won't. So I'm a little ornery sometimes, and sometimes I get into trouble. But the whole idea was the number one question ever was, how do I find a good sharp shop? I live in Scottsdale. Do you know any good shops in Scottsdale? I live in Sun City. I live in Peoria. I live on the west side. I'm in Avondale. I'm in Goodyear. I'm in Mesa. I'm in Apache Junction. And I figured, you know, rather than just guess, I'm going to create that list. And so in 1988-89, I created a list. And I went to every one of them and I said, hey, it's important that you behave yourself. It's important that you're good. And I checked them thoroughly. I mean, I did everything to ensure I've picked the best of the best. And one of the common denominators in our group is husbands and wives. That's the common denominator. There's lots of husband-wife combinations, and there seems to be a balance that's created by that. Now, sometimes Jack the Ripper is the wife. She handles all the nasty work, and the husband is the one that greets people, kisses babies, and hugs people. It's not that way at my shop. My wife is Snow White. I'm known as Jack the Ripper. I handle the bad stuff. She handles the good stuff. But everybody else is kind of the same way. You talk about Larry Harker's Auto, husband and wife combination. When you talk about Kelly Clark, husband and wife combination. You talk about Inman and Sons, and now we have a father-son. But it's like Thompson's. Thompson's is an uncle-son. So as you go through and through all of the group, there's a lot out there. I only say you don't have to change. If you're happy with your repair shop, fine. Stay there, because that's a relationship that's very valuable. If you want to compare your shop, take a look and see if they're on my list, marksalem.com. But if you don't have a shop, then I'm backing you up. I got your back, and I'll make sure you're treated fairly. I do not get involved, personally involved, in the dispute resolution process. Whatever the Better Business Bureau says as a final is what we're going to do. Up until then, you're going to negotiate in good faith with the shop, and I'm kind of pushing him from behind. So I've got your back, and frankly, there's times where the customer's not right. And frankly, there's times that the shop is really bad. But me too. I've had problems as well. So there's times I haven't been able to handle customers. Sometimes I'm just not the shop for you. Sometimes maybe you demand more than I'm willing to give. Or maybe you come from an environment where, you know, talking for a long time gets you less of a price. Or you think that I'm Monty Hall and you want to make a deal. That doesn't work. But there's a shop for you out there. And I'm proud to say that my list is different than the rest, because as a referral network, that's what they call them today, as a referral network, there's an income stream from the people you're referring to. So in my case, it would be the shop, and that is true for me. I use it 100% of their funds to fund this radio show. Then there is somebody who not only charges the business, but they charge the customer. So that you have to pay a fee to see the list. Then there's somebody who charges the business and the customer and then has advertisers. And so they have three sources of income. This is not a source of income for me. This is a source of income to pay for the show. I'm proud of our industry. I'm terribly proud of our industry. We have some of the finest auto repair shops in the valley that I've ever seen, and I've traveled a lot, and I've spoken to shops a lot. They're honest, they're dependable, they have good staff, they sell good parts, they don't sell cheap ones, they stand behind their warranties, and if you have a problem, they're all good listeners, and they'll digest what you say. And then maybe they'll consult with other shops about what would you do, or they'd call me and say, what would I do? That's what goes on behind the scenes. But the difference is I got your back. You're not going to be, and why 5,000? It used to be 100. But my wife says, you don't cover nothing with 100. So I went to 1,000, and she goes, you don't even cover nothing with 1,000. This is Snow White talking. I says, well, I can cover most engines and virtually every transmission for 5. She says, then that's where you ought to be. And I said, this is going to mean that you're not going to be able to go to Nordstrom's if we have to pay a big transmission bill. And she says, well, maybe I'm liking that $1,000 better. Oh, she's going to kill me for that. She shops at a place called Target. I've never heard of that, but I guess it's just right underneath Nordstrom's. Nevertheless, the only thing I can tell you is when we go to Nordstrom, she has her own guy that parks her car for her, so she's probably a really good customer there. Nevertheless, we are blessed with the ability to be proud of our industry. We're blessed with our ability to share that with you. We want you to know that I have your interest in front of everybody else's, and I want you to remember three things for me, just three things. When you are told that you need all your hoses, then you say, what symptoms are you going to fix? And if they say that they're leaking but you don't have anything on the ground, that should raise up a red flag. If they say you have motor mounts and you say, what symptoms are you going to fix? And they say, it idles rough, and you say, no, it doesn't. That should raise a red flag. If they say that you need to have the front end rebuilt on your car, and you say, what symptoms are you going to repair? And they say abnormal tire wear, and you walk out there and they look okay to you on the front, then that should raise a red flag. The first question, what symptoms are you going to fix with your suggested repair? Number two, is this a fix or a guess? I brought it in because I had a hard time starting it when it was hot. It would crank over, but it wouldn't catch. Is this a guess or a fix? Because if it's a fix, good. If it's a guess, I want to know who's going to pay what if it turns out to be a bad guess. And finally, what's the final cost? What's my out-the-door price? How much do I have to write my check for? You have to be specific about parts, labor, shop supplies, environmental charges, sales tax, and any other fees. How much do I have to write my check for? That's very, very valid. So three things. If you'll learn those, I'm providing you with the best self-defense mechanisms that you can possibly get. And it goes along with our philosophy of self-defense for car expense. That's what we're all about, self-defense for car expense. What symptoms are you going to fix with your suggested repair? Is this a fix or a guess? And if it's a guess, let's talk about how we're going to unwind this guess, if we're going to unwind it. And number three, how much do I have to write my check for? Just remember those. Those are three important aspects of car repair and car expense. Nobody does it right perfect all the time. If you go to the Better Business Bureau, you'll see I've had some complaints this year. I'm proud to tell you that they've been handled to the customer satisfaction or the Better Business Bureau satisfaction. That's what I strive for. Somebody has to say, you did a good job. And I'll keep moving towards the middle until somebody says that. I'll do what I have to do to make either the customer happy or to make the Better Business Bureau happy, because as business people kind of know, there's every once in a while you run across somebody that can't be pleased. And the last lady wanted me to attend a bunch of classes on spousal abuse, but I've never had the opportunity to be in that situation, and I don't know how she came up with that. It's probably because I tease my wife on the radio. Nevertheless, please wear your seatbelt. Please drive safely. And it's a nice weather out there, and when it is, somebody does nice something nice for you. Would you stick your hand out the window and wave and say thank you? That's a nice thing. You're going to make their day, I promise. I'll see you next Saturday, 10 to noon, right here.